three ball from CG43. They're in front.
This is flat out ridiculous.
From a beautiful left hand, in and out finish, the old fashioned way.
Newell gets to the basket with one to come. From there again. You have got to be kidding me. Tyson Stiff.
Well, look, I coach the same from the beginning to the end, preseason to the last game. I don't coach for playoffs. I don't coach for, you know, to beat this team more than that team. I coach the same way, and we try to preach that message throughout. It seems that, you know, as the generations come along, they had to have something to play for other than that game. I think this is one of the most beautiful games, you know, a sport you can play. I just think for all the reasons, basketball is just a great sport, and a lot of guys can't get out there and play it just for the love of it. If we got three games left and they can't get out there and play this thing just for the love of basketball, you get to bounce a ball. I mean, you get to bounce a ball and people look at you and clap for you. And some of them just gonna be a rude awakening. When they're selling computers or Xerox copiers, ain't nobody gonna clap for them. So they, you know, a lot of them will miss out on what this is all about. But, you know, I'm coach the same. I'm going to be in the gym every day. We're going to be doing individuals. We're going to be working. And the guys that want to participate, I'm happy for them, too. The guys that don't, I'm happy for them to sit their butt on the bench.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to an evergreen episode of the NBL Pocket Podcast. That snippet just before was from my very special guest today, Joey Wright, someone who I think could arguably be the best ever coach in the NBL. But we'll talk about that some more. I'm really proud of this episode. Joey and I talk about race, culture, and the business of pro sports as it pertains to basketball in Australia. The question I wanted to pose outright in this conversation to Joey Wright was, has it been an advantage or disadvantage being African-American in the Australian basketball landscape? I didn't pose that question to Joey outright, but you people out there, I've spoken to a lot of you, you're smart people, and perhaps from the questions I did ask, you'll be able to answer that overarching major question for yourselves or even on Joey's behalf. I think this was a good time to speak with Joey. I think our chat, this is from a couple of weeks ago, maybe even a month ago, and it took place just before that article about Basketball Australia being a quote-unquote white boys club was released. So in a small way, we lift the curtain on that little expose, a fraction, I suppose, just on that finding by the Human Rights Commission. No boomer has yet to come out in opposition to those findings, which is curious. If you want my answer to that overarching question that I mentioned before, get in touch on Twitter or Instagram or email. Or if you want to get a greater sense of it, order a copy of Body Nodge is Marvelous. The link is in the description. Great handbook, novel on the league. This conversation was recorded over the phone, so apologies in advance for any sound issues. I think you can hear me rocking around in my squeaky office chair, so apologies in advance. But on Joey Wright, Joey Wright is in equal parts misunderstood and underappreciated in equal parts. He should be in the Hall of Fame, but he's not, and I'm not sure he'll ever get there. And not because he doesn't deserve it, because I just don't think he quite fits the mold. I think also he really should be the Boomers coach. And I say that because he has a great rapport with players young and old. And he himself, comparatively in coaching circles, is young. And I like the Gorgian, and I like Brian Gorgian, and I like his hiring. But ultimately, I feel like that was a reactionary move. We'd seen Gorgian, and I think perhaps the best of Gorgian. I think that hiring was done out of nostalgia rather than innovation. You know, there's all this talk about Boomers culture, but I'm not so sure I buy it. I mean, I think there's more culture in a pot of yogurt. The team has never won, and some great coaching and playing talent has been set aside because they don't fit the mold. That's going to become a theme of this interview. And I guess the other overarching question I had is, does Australian basketball take care of its own body? Nodge, not in the Hall of Fame. Joey Wright, undervalued. Rob Beveridge, in the reject bin. You know, I'm beginning to lose faith. But as far as this chat goes, I came away with a great admiration for Joey after speaking with him, more so than I had before. I really sympathize with his frustrations. His frustrations about being misunderstood, not fitting in, being an outsider. This is a conversation more than basketball. But I think Joey's story is as Australian as bushels, despite being a Texan. And I think the mindset needs to change. There needs to be a seeking to understand from more people. But to give you an idea, here's some of the stuff we spoke about. And tell me if this stuff doesn't blow your skirt up, wet your beak and float your boat, well, you know, I don't know what's wrong with you. We talked about names, Joe, Joseph or Joey, success in real estate, identifying as a realtor or basketball coach and the nature of success, Australian citizenship and permanent residency, sports agents and self-representation, should he have been the Boomers coach, is he too passionate for the Australian culture, if he were to be given the Boomers reins, what would he have done with Ben Simmons and that team going into Tokyo? Does Brian Gorgon's departure for China hurt his Australian legacy? Where does the budget need to go to win in the NBL other than on players? How to beat Bryce Cotton? We forget Joey Wright is one of the few coaches who's had a team that beat Bryce Cotton in the playoffs or finals, whatever you want to call them. Working in the media, I pitch an idea called Fully Imported. We talk about Joey's relationship with the media, that comment Slim and None and Slim's Left Town. We talk about his persona influences, being vilified by the NBL and the need for villains in sports. Is there a need for that good and evil? What sports media does Joey consume or want to consume? We talk about Cairns and their problems. We talk about that last interview he did with John Casey and the fallout. And Chris Golding, being a kindred spirit with Chris Golding. And the idea that great players need to believe in themselves over their system, coach, and even teammates. Anyway, geez, I've armed you with every reason to listen, so I hope you do because I'm really proud of this one. And lastly, before I rack off, I really liked something Joey said in the course of our chat. And he said, "My walk is my walk. I don't wear another man's singlet." And so in that spirit, here he is. It's Joey Wright.
Because I'm a Joseph too, or Joe. You go by Joey. Why Joey?
That is my full name. Joey.
Really?
It's not Joseph. It is Joey. When I got here to Australia, Australians went to trying to find a way to shorten it or make it, you know, you got to have an O or an E on the end of it. And I already had both, Joey, so they didn't know what to do. But it's actually Joey.
Wow. I mean, I'm Joseph, so I get down to Joe, but I get Joey. That's the thing that I got shortened to, is Joey, on sports fields anyway.
Yeah, they're going to shorten it somehow. It can't just be what you're born with. But, yeah, mine's actually Joey, which is a very uncommon name for Afro-American in the United States.
What, do you know why that is, or why is that?
Oh, it's just not a typical name for African Americans. I've met very few African Americans with the name of Joey throughout my time.
And I always introduce myself as Joseph because when I say Joe, people hear John. When you say Joey, does that get confused for anything?
No, they usually roll with it. Yeah. It's usually Joey. They may change it in conversation and just call me Joe, which I just go with it. If they call me Joe, they call me Joe.
Here's my question as well. This is straying away from basketball. I've sort of heard that you're been quite successful. I don't know if you'd use that word about yourself, but in real estate, without giving away your secret recipe, what goes into that, and you know how good?
Well, look, when I was playing basketball and playing professionally, I knew right away I wasn't getting rich from it. So I said I better try to figure out some other ways to make some money. And I, you know, the one great thing about playing professional basketball is you have a ton of time on your hand. So I was able to play and do a lot of reading and research. So I just started buying property. Got pretty lucky because
property in Australia, property in the U.S. or both.
Both now, but at the time in the U.S. And I was in Austin, Texas, which just happened to go through this crazy, amazing boom. So nothing, and it's not like I was really smart at anything. It's just I was lucky and end up investing in the right area at the right time. But yeah, it's been great, and I still do real estate development now, and been doing it for the last 20 years.
Then tell me, when people ask you, like, oh, are you, when you introduce yourself to people, do you say, I'm Joey Wright, the basketball coach, or Joey Wright, the realtor? What do you feel you've been more successful in, you know what I mean, or identify as?
Well, I definitely don't feel like success is determined by the amount of money you made. I've definitely been better at making money in real estate than professional sporting environment, mm-hmm. Especially here in Australia, when I didn't know if I was getting a paycheck or not. But you know, I think it's what success is determined, what warms the heart, what gets the juices going. And that's always been, you know, basketball. And I, you know, my success at basketball to me is determined by my relationships with my past players. And, you know, I think in that respect, I've been very successful because those guys have enriched my life and made me, you know, smarter, made me a better basketball coach, made me a better human being by being around so many different successful individuals.
Right. My other question is, you've been around Australia for a long time. Are you a PR citizen, or if you're not, do you wish to be?
I am now, and only as of a year and 8 months.
Why the delay? You've been here a long time.
I know. I never saw the benefits of it initially, because I wasn't thinking past the next year. I mean, my first 6 years in Australia, I was on a 1 year contract for 5 years.
Right.
And I just said, you know, if you don't want me, I always work from the point of view, if you didn't want me, I don't want to be there. So let's just do 1 year contracts, 1 year contracts, 1 year contracts. Mm. That way it gives us both the opportunity to evaluate at the end of the year. And you know, later on I saw some security and wanted to be here as a citizen, and you know, especially where the US is right now. I feel like Australia is one of the best places in the world to be.
Right, right. Did you ever, so that's as a citizen or PR?
I'm a PR. Yeah. I get my citizenship in 4 more months.
4 more months. Wow. Okay. Well, congratulations on that happened. You talked about there, like, you always negotiated 1 year contracts. Did you ever have an agent, or you didn't feel the need?
No, I never had an agent. And not as a coach. I had an agent represent me in the U.S. on some things, but here in Australia, I just always operated and just did it myself. And,
did you find that formative? Like, would you ever recommend that to a player, that they represent themselves nowadays, or has things changed?
Yeah, I mean, if they know what they want, especially if you're a veteran player. If you're a veteran player, you understand contracts, you know what's going on. You know, save 20% and do it yourself. But, you know, if you're new and you need someone with placement, or if you're don't understand the ins and outs of contracts. You know, obviously through real estate, I understood contracts well enough to negotiate myself and to make sure the clauses were there that needed. I did have Dimitri Paris, which is from the W Group here, look over all my contracts and just make sure they were okay.
While we're on the subject of Australia, Boomers coach. And have you ever been approached to do that? Is that something that either appeals to you now or in the past? Yeah, what's your relationship with the Boomers?
Look, I've always, every time the jobs come up, I've interviewed for it.
Even most recently?
I have never. Yeah, even most recently.
Right.
I've never gotten an interview, but I've always put my name in there just so they can say, you know, they can't ever say I didn't. I've never gotten a response I would have liked. I think my success here in the NBL would support the fact that I could at least get an interview. But I do think the people there have always had a vision about what that coach should look like, and I just don't think I fit that bill.
And look like in what way, Joe?
Just you know, what it actually looks like. Whatever that is, it's opposite of me. You can't argue with my success. You look at the guys that have actually went over and played in the Boomers. Most of them I've coached at some point in time. You look at most NBL teams, you look out there on the floor, most of the guys I've coached at some point in time, and I have good relationships with those guys as well. And they would support me at that level for sure. I looked at the top scorers in the league over the last couple of years. I've coached pretty much all the Australians that were the top scorers in the league. So it's weird that I wouldn't be, and not only that, I've known that they put together a depth chart which included all the NBL coaches at one time except me, which was a bit disappointing.
Are you more disappointed by not getting it, or do you feel more angry? Like, because I'd be, if I was in your position, I'd feel angry. I'd be like, geez, what more has a guy got to do?
Not angry. I'm not angry because I do think every person gets to choose who they want next to them for whatever reason they desire.
Good point, yeah.
And if I don't fit that reason, then fine. But you know, I couldn't even get an assistant job. I couldn't even get invited to camp. I've been here for this many years. I've identified tons of talent that the Australian Boomers program has overlooked over time, and still not to get invited to their camps or clinics and stuff like that is disappointing. I know it's a good boy system here in the sporting environment, and I've never fit that bill from day one when I walked in and was told by those guys that, you know, I'd never be here. I'd never last. And, you know, wow. So it's been a long road, but I think I forged some ground for, you know, Americans coming over to coach, and especially Afro-Americans coaching in this league.
In a conversation with Max Becker from the Sporting Max podcast, he's a friend of the show, I've had him on, he's great. You said you were too passionate for the Australian culture. I do, not that I find that about you, but I find that the Australian culture can be quite stuffy. What's the remedy?
Well, it's going to be more influence as this world grows. I mean, remember, Australia was cut off from everywhere at one point. And then as the internet evolved and as vision evolved, you know, it's going to be more influence and outside influence. And it's already has, you know, it's happened. And as more influence come over, I mean, people think I'm fiery. Watch your league coach. you know, but the average Australian wouldn't watch your league, where the rest of the world loves your league. I think it's one of the purest forms of basketball right now. But if you watch their coaches coach, you know, they don't get confused or upset when they're trying to drive players to be better or try to win the game at all costs.
Yeah, I mean, look at Dan Shamir this year. Like, he's taking a pretty tough line on someone like, say, Lamar Patterson and his whole team, to be honest.
I mean, that's just how it is. That's just the way you coach. And, you know, Dan does a great job, and he wants the best out of his players, and he's going to drive them to get the best because, you know, he knows that if he doesn't, he doesn't keep his job. So, whereas here in Australia, you can be subpar and keep your job as long as you play the game the right way. That doesn't happen anywhere else in the world. Some of the records some of the coaches have had here, or some of the talent that they had and been subpar with, they would not have survived anywhere else in the world. But here in Australia, be nice to the media, be nice to your owner, and keep your job.
Crossing over, like, have you ever placed a call to Trevor Gleeson? Because I thought he was really hard done by this year about the Boomers job. I mean, have you ever placed a call to him and said, well, what's going on?
I think this year, I don't think it's even a question. Brian Gordon is the best it is. So if Brian's available, then everybody else is off the table.
Yourself.
I don't care. Even myself. I mean, if Brian's available, that's done. Like, you know, I don't even think it's another coach in the world would be better than Brian Gorgon for the Australian Boomers, because he understands Australian culture and he can coach. So, you know, if you said bring over Brad Stevens, I would say nah. Get Brian Gorgeous.
Okay, all right. Let's talk about that, though, the Boomers. So let's say in an imaginary world you had been given the job. What would you do with that team? And in particular, how would you weaponize someone like Ben Simmons, who's a unique basketball talent, a spectacular one, but a unique one?
Well, I think you play the style of play that's unlike typical Australian basketball. Let's speed up the tempo a little bit. We got talent. And if you have talent, want more possessions than less possessions,
right?
Because talent takes over. So if there's 70 possessions in the game and you have talent, that's better than you than if it's 50 possessions. 50 possessions, they may, you know, out X and O you. But in 70 possessions, talent's going to kick in. And right now, I mean, Australia's one of the most talented countries in the world with, you know, their national team. So you could rival Spain, Turkey, you know, Greece, Italy, any of those teams. Australia has as much talent and very unique, and, you know, talent where you got a 6'8", 6'9" point guard who can play up tempo. You got shooters on the wing that are 6'8", 6'9", and Joe Ingles. You have dominant bigs that are bangers down low, and you also finesse bigs. Like, they have everything covered, everything covered. So I think Brian will do a good job, and I think they'll medal.
Do you think they'll medal? One of the three.
I think they'll medal this year.
Hmm.
I do.
Hmm. Interesting.
I think they'll medal.
Let's talk about Brian Gorge. We talked about it a little bit before. Very, very, like when he signed, it was like, oh my goodness, you know, like his signing made the breakfast news. No, NBL hadn't really been in the ABC breakfast news or 7 news. When Brian Gorgeous signed, it was a big deal. Where I sort of draw the comparisons between you and he, I see you as like the Pat Riley coach. I see him as the Phil Jackson coach. He's kind of got a few more numbers on you. But you've always, your teams have kind of changed over time, changed with you. And also your success has come outside Perth, Sydney, and Melbourne. And in the NBL, if you look at the history of it, that's really difficult to do. The other thing I like about yourself is when things got tough in the NBL, really, really tough, that sort of the year after the Dragons won, Brian Gorgian, you know, as much as we like him, we love, he left for China and stayed there for a decade, whereas you stayed. You stayed in the NBL at a time that was, I'm sure, incredibly different, difficult. I guess my question is, like, does the Gorgian myth take a hit in your eyes because of that, or not so much? You still hold him up?
Well, no, I still hold him in high esteem. And let me tell you, if I could have went for Monty Brian with, or I would have went, trust me. I definitely would have left for the money that Brian left for. Don't give me any credit for that. I stayed here because it wasn't a lot of choices to go anywhere at that particular time. I feel like if I've had the budgets that Brian had over the years, I would have had even more success. We were very successful in the years that I coached, but having those budgets would have been great. I had those budgets in Brisbane, without a doubt. I did not have those at Gold Coast or Adelaide. And regardless of what anybody thinks, you're not winning in this league unless you spend the money to win in this league. And even when you spend the money, and it's usually 4 or 5 teams that spend the money every year, you're still not going to win it every year. But you put yourself in contention. But you're not winning this thing unless you spend the money.
And does that spend money on players, I'm assuming?
Yeah. Yeah, it's players.
Does money have to go anywhere else to win?
You have to support your players outside of just giving them money. I mean, they need to have adequate gym space. They need to have adequate recovery, adequate, transportation on the road, hotels, all that stuff needs to be up to par as well, because as soon as you show unprofessionalism, it gives a player the excuse to be unprofessional.
Right, okay. Let's talk about this. Like, this season, right, I think Bryce Cotton is bordering unbeatable, but you did it. You did, and in the playoffs, you're one of the few, I think you're one of the only coaches who can say that. They had that down year. Every other year he's won it. So my question to you, Joe, is what was the secret that year, or if it was a secret, what was the secret that year of beating Bryce Cotton, and how does a coach called you today and said, how do I beat this guy in the playoffs? What would you say?
We had amazing leadership that year. Amazing leadership. With Shannon Shorter there, we had Josh Childress there. Mitch Creek. We had three guys that were not only coach doers, but coach sayers. So they didn't just do what we asked them to do. They also emphasized verbally the things we needed done. And, Perth had a pretty good, leadership group as well. But I thought we were more talented that year, and I thought we had better leadership. And so we were able to, we've always played fairly well against Perth over the years. Mm-hmm. And we're able to beat them. But playoffs, they usually go to another level. They usually take it up a bit. And we were able to take it up a bit as well because we did have a talent there. You got, Nathan Sobeys on that team. Matthew Hodgson's on that team. Yeah. Mitch Tree, Josh Childress. We were loaded. I mean, we had the talent.
Yeah, right. You just had the talent. So it's like a Bobby Fischer, the chess player, goes like, it's not about psychology, it's about good moves. There wasn't like a strategy or initiative. Like Sydney have tried to beat him up the last couple of years, and that's not is there a good move against Bryce Cotton?
I mean, Bryce is he is unguardable. Like, he is the best, or one of the best I've seen since I've been here. And it's not just his ability to play the game, but it's also his ability to think the game. He makes you, if you get close to him, he's going to make you foul him. You get far away from him, he's going to knock it down. When you think he's tired, he's not. He's going to play all out for 40 minutes, and he has the right intellect. He allows superstars to be superstars next to him. He can go get his no matter who's on the court. So he's not pillaging from the superstar next to him. To find a guy like him is rare, and that's rare for our league, because you typically can't pay him the money to come to this league. Perth, you know, they can pay him the money to come to this league, and that's where finances matter.
Yeah, exactly. I've heard some of the money's on or thereabouts. It's good money.
my team, the 1 year, made half of what he made.
I want to talk about the media. You speak pretty well. Have you ever thought about doing print, TV, written, on camera? Is that a desire of yours or not really?
Too honest for media.
But you can do your own media. You could do your own Patreon. You could do your own channel or something, or, you know, sign up with The Athletic on a subscription service. You can say whatever you want.
Yeah, but eventually, in order to be substantial in media, you have to have support of sponsors or support of others. And once again, when you get to tell the truth in public, it's not necessarily the best thing for advancement.
I'm happy. Sorry, Joe, I interrupted.
I'm happy to keep doing real estate, and I'm, you know, running my academy, which is what I'm really, really enjoying right now. So,
let me pitch you an idea nonetheless. Title of the show, Fully Imported, right? You got a couple of circular leather couches. It's the likes of you. Derek Ruck is a good commentator. Corey's in it now. Corey Williams. Sean Redditch. Kevin Lish, maybe. Casey Frank.
Yeah.
All former imports. Yep. Fully imported. You're sitting around chatting about the NBA and the NBA.
That would be excellent. I saw an NBA show similar to that where they had all the old guys on there and talk about it, and I loved it. It was unbelievable. I used to watch that all the time. Something like that where I'm not the focus, because I don't think anything I've done is that great to be spoken about. But, you know, to listen to Derek Rucker or Redditch, who I just love and respect, and, you know, it would be great to listen to those guys.
Speaking about your sort of way of speaking in media and that, I think the one that really summed it up, where you talk about how you're, I guess the word I'd use is sort of misunderstood, was Slim and Nunn and Slim's Left Town. Do you remember when you said that in the press conference?
Yeah.
And I thought that was the interesting one to me, because I thought, Joey's not getting through. People don't get it, or they're not seeking to understand. Because when you said that, I was like, oh, that's Ali. That's, you know, Frazier's got two chances, Slim and Nunn and Slim's Left Town. And you said that, and some people were really upset by that. They were like, oh, I don't find that funny. I don't find that funny at all. And I was like, they just didn't get it. When you said that line, did you think, people are going to get this is Ali, or what was your mindset behind that line?
I do understand. I don't say anything to get a reaction from outside. Mm-hmm. So it's nothing I've ever said ever. It was like, oh, I'm going to say this so that people will get it or like me or dislike me. I speak from the heart. That's a term that is very, 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 very common in Texas. Mm-hmm. You'll hear that in every conversation in Texas. So it's not something that that I would have said just, you know, provokingly at all. It's just something I would have said. You know, people here, you know, when I first got here, and people, you, Bob's your uncle. I was like, Bob's not my uncle. So what are you talking about? Like, what do you mean? It's just probably a misinterpretation of vernacular for me being from the United States and living a large portion of my life in Texas.
Growing up, do you have anyone that you've sort of based your persona off of? Because just recently I've got into, I saw the Eddie Murphy movie Dolomite and the Rudy Ray Moore films. I'd seen Petey Wheat's Girl. I don't know if you know that film. Is that someone you look up to, that sort of with a nice turn of phrase? Who are your sort of persona influences, if you have any?
Well, I did in sport. Muhammad Ali was, someone that I always hugely respected because not only was he just dominant in a sport, but he took a social conscious approach to the sport. And I thought that was, you know, something that was great that he thought outside of just being a great sportsman, but also the people around him. And that's very important to me, is to raise the social conscience of individuals, not just African Americans, but anybody who's being oppressed, and speak about it.
Yeah, right. But no persona influences. Like, there's not someone you go, oh, I wish I was like that guy, growing up from film or TV or nothing.
No, because you know, I have this motto: I'll never wear another man's jersey. And what that means is my walk is my walk and his walk is his walk. I've never had the, you know, I want what he has or I want to be like him. I want what's everything that Joey Wright's supposed to have and nothing I'm not supposed to have. And so that comes with my own walk throughout life. I understand that, you know, I'm probably one of the most misjudged individuals in Australia's sport history. Like, when people see me or they see me outside, oh, he's this, he's that, he's whatever, hang out with me for a day. You'll be like, this guy is the silliest dude I've ever been around.
This is what I've heard.
he cracks more jokes on people. He, you know, but also I'm so supportive of individuals. I never want anyone to be hurt for any reason. And that's why I've had the relationship with my players that I've had over the years.
Do you think people have seek to understand? Do you think people have, do you think people have been pretty quick to dismiss? Or do you share some of the blame yourself where you go, ah, I could have maybe handled myself publicly differently or better? Or what do you think?
I think when...
Or is it just a major culture clash? Sorry.
No. It's not a major culture clash. Mm. I think it's more, you know, when the NBL purposely goes out and run a campaign to create me as a villain, that's what people believe. Like, if they're gonna believe as individuals, we believe the easier thing. We actually sit down for 2 hours at a day and watch news. Tell me what I should be thinking. That's what the news is. Tell me what I should be feeling. Tell me what I should be thinking. It's the easiest thing ever to do, and we don't go out and research and invest in our own thoughts. And so as long as we don't do that as humans, and an individual say, this is who he is, and that individual has a lot of money, a lot of influence, it's just easy to believe that. And so it's just easy to, you know, easy to believe it. So that's not, you know, it's the NBL's fault for running a campaign to make anyone look bad. I have children, and you're going to run a campaign to make me look bad. I mean, that's just, I'll never forgive them for that, and that's why I never want to have anything to do with the NBL.
I don't know, suppose you saw a little documentary, 30 for 30 on ESPN about Christian Laettner, where it was like, it was called I Hate Christian Laettner. You know, a lot of people hated him. I think there was a similar sort of media stuff around him where he was so easy to hate, you know, poppycock, whatever else. Did you sympathize with him in that way, in the way that, you know, you were put up as a media villain? But do you also think that in sports, because it's such a story-driven entertainment thing at the NBL level, do you ever feel the need for a villain? You know what I mean?
No, I don't think you have a need for a villain. I think the sport itself speaks volumes. Like, I think there's been so many, you know, systematic approaches to marketing the game here in Australia since Larry's taken over that it's just nonsense. You know, we could promote the game in so much better ways. I mean, to find someone for something they say and then promote it. I mean, that's the most ridiculous thing ever. Like, if it's demeaning and it's bringing a game in disrepute, don't promote it. Don't say, oh, this is what he said, come to the game, it's going to be a fiery one. Like, that to me is just asinine, and, you know, to take that approach. So it's been some real, real, you know, different ways of marketing that I haven't really, really agreed with. And, you know, and that's, you know, obviously falling victim to that is one reason, but also just a greater game itself doesn't need that. The game itself is so damn good. We can market it in ways that will be more sustainable than the way they've decided to market.
Really? I mean, is there anyone in the media you really like? Like Boddy, for example, do you read his stuff? And if so, what do you like about it? You know, what's the strategy?
I've never read a newspaper article.
Really? Is that by choice, player. Or are you just having a
time? Yeah, by choice. Yeah.
Oh, why is
that? I never read a newspaper article. I had this conversation with Boddy. I respect Boddy as a coach. Mm-hmm. He's a great coach. People don't really know that.
Right.
He's a really great coach. But as a journalist, I never read anything he does. And Boddy asked me why. And I said, why would I read what I know most about? That's your interpretation of it. Like, I was at practice every day. You came one day, and then you came to the game on the weekend. Like, I was there at the game on the weekend. I was there every practice. I know more about what you're writing. Only way I would read what you're writing is because I feel like it's either going to make me feel good or make me feel bad. Why do I need that?
Really?
Really, who's the most informative person? Like, I'm there.
Yeah, true.
I'm there. So if I wasn't there, then I may read about what someone said. Because I've been in the middle of it, I don't even try to get into those conversations with the media. I've had a great relationship with the media here. Mm-hmm. I was a little disappointed at the end when the media here in Adelaide knew exactly who I was, and they would call me and say, look, we're going to have to say this. Just because it's news, but we know who you are, but we still got to say it.
That's not good.
See, that part I had a problem with, because I'm like, yo, you know who I am. Like, you know, because, you know, being here for 7 years.
Yeah, you think so.
You know, after a while, you just kind of, you know, camera goes off, and, you know, then I got it. But the flip side of that is they knew some thoughts that I had on things that when they turned the cameras on, I didn't say either. So... It's just part of being. It's just a part of being there. Like they knew what I was thinking about something because they were. Some of these guys end up becoming friends. I mean, they're friends. We have a coffee together, playing basketball together, whatever. So they would know my peer thoughts, and the cameras come on, and then I would say something different, and they're probably like, "Hey, we owe you one." So,
did you enjoy doing media stuff, or did you ever find it a bit of a drag? And I guess my greater question is, what merit is there in media? Like, what would Now that you're not coaching and things like that, what would you like to see of anything, or consume for yourself? You know,
I would like. And this is just not Australian media. I would like to see more integrity in media. I mean, people start because like I said earlier, it's so influential when people sit down and actually, you know, take their views on what's being said on TV. I would like to see more integrity in media and not. You know, people don't realize how much media is supported by the sponsors. I mean, if I got a sponsor that's putting in $1 million a year and he's a, you know, he drills for oil, you better believe I'm not going to be talking about the oil business. But that's, you know, that's what disappoints me. But that's in every media, not just
sports stuff. Yeah. All right. It's interesting. Black Panther. I was speaking with Boddy about that film, and he said you got an interesting relationship with that film.
I loved it. Like, you know, I loved it from the fact that it for once gave, like, we had black heroes in a movie that were doing really cool things, and for once, you know, going somewhere where black people actually ran the world and it was a better place. Like the utopia itself was in you know, a black country. So like it spoke volumes for the Afro-American community, the African community. And it just, I think it was just a great positive movie.
Right.
And it was supported by everybody too. Like a lot of people went to see it. So I think it was, you know, supported by all races.
You know, jumping back to basketball, I look at the Cairns Taipans this year, and they're not doing as well as anticipated. I don't know, do you watch any of the NBL anymore?
Yeah, I do. Still watch games, yeah.
Much, how would you diagnose their problems? What's the issue?
This league is such a, you know, front runner, you know, this and that. They, you know, I think the third import thing really influenced their what they could do out there on the court. Not having the ability to go with a third major import probably influences a team of less talent more than a team of talent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're Australian-based. You know, Majuk, they're really strong with him as Australian-based. the shooter, Mirko, the shooter they got there, he's talented. And, you know, it started getting thin after, you know, three or four guys on the bench, they start to get thin, and I think that's affected them. You know, Mike's done a great job. He's, you know, he's probably coaching harder than he coached last year. I just think they got on a good run with those 3 points. I do think Cam was probably more engaged. Cam Oliver was more engaged last year than he seems to be this year. And that makes a difference. Mm-hmm. Machado is still
unreal.
You know, unbelievable. Yeah, he's still killing it.
They'll make a run. Yeah, you talked about how you only signed 1 year deals as a player. I mean, Cam Oliver signed a 2 year deal last season, and it's like maybe the foot's come off a little bit with the security. You know what I mean? just a thought, yeah. Just an impression of mine. You know.
Well, a lot of those guys, their first year out, and you know, I'm gonna play this year and make the league. They play a different way, and then when the dream goes, when the dream leaves, I've seen that NBA burnout. When they think, okay, I don't really have a chance of making the NBA, I'm going to just, you know, make my money. That mentality, and I'm not saying that's him, but I'm just saying I've seen that a lot, and that may be him.
And I'm sure that, and how do you fight that? You personally, when you were a coach, how do you fight that? How do you combat that? And is that the thing that probably drove you to the most violent extreme, if you had any?
Yeah, it really drove me, you know. What I try to do is refocus their vision and say, you know, whether you make the NBA or not is not the most important thing. The fact that you're actually, you know, you're playing ball and people are going to pay to come see you, they can do that anywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just, you know, if you really want to make money, this thing is going to be probably outside of the NBA. And it's about extending your career, and it's about, you know, playing good basketball to extend your career. So when those guys, you know, don't do that, and some you just can't refocus. It's like NBA are done, and they, you know, they're finished. So,
I want to go back to that last interview you gave with John Casey, where you kind of just said it. When you said that, when you sat down with John or stood with John, I think it was on the street. What was your hope with that? Did you think, I'm just gonna tell the truth? And did you think like, oh, gee, this is not gonna go well? Did it ever cross your mind like, maybe I'll just say thank you, raise a hand, walk away, and never say another word, never, you know, just totally divorce yourself from the NBL. You chose to speak to John Casey. Why was that?
Well, I coached for 17 years, and I was leaving. If I'd have coached for 17 years and left without saying a word, it was no malice in that conversation at all. No. And if anyone really wants to listen to that conversation again, I preface it by saying everything was my fault. I think it was obvious that we had the lowest import production in the league. That's statistical. Mm-hmm. You could look at that. But I want to give those guys give them a reason. And I said, it was my fault we had the lowest import production in the league, but that's ultimately my fault. That's my responsibility. Mm-hmm. I got to find a more way. Now, everyone turned that off because the people that wanted to dig in and give me a kick in the butt, they only heard what they wanted to hear.
Yeah.
But, you know, I prefaced every conversation by saying whatever happened here in Adelaide was my fault. Mm. See, I'm of the belief, if you want to give me all the blame, I'll take all that blame because that means you got to give me all the credit when things went right. So if you're going to say it's your fault and it's only you and only you're the reason why we were bad, okay, I'll take that. I'm the reason. Then the flip side of that, the converse of that statement is, well, when we were successful, you're only the reason why as well. And I think we had more success than failure while I was here. So I'll take that, and was willing to take that, and was absolutely no malice in that. I was leaving a coffee shop walking down the street, and John Casey chased me down and found me. And hey, you know, this and that. And I don't even know what John actually, what the news actually reported. I never saw what
you never saw it. Okay.
I never saw what they reported. But if they only reported and didn't report the fact that I said, when I said it's my fault, then that's once again disappointing of John Casey. Yeah. I probably should ask him at some point. It just, you know, at one point I just didn't want to do it anymore, or talk about it anymore. But if you saw it, did you see it?
I did see it, and I think it was perfect with that. I remember you saying, I think the line I remember was, I brought these guys here, so it's on me. I thought that's the way you phrased it. And I was like, okay. Yeah, so I didn't... I see it in the way, the tone you had. But I think, I mean, half of it was more like your plans for the future, what you really enjoyed out of the process, which was the people you met along the way. You know, it was, yeah, I think people, again, like, we go back to this thing about, you know, Australians and NBL fans like seeking to understand. Okay, something's different, and it maybe doesn't appeal to me immediately, but what's going on here a little bit more? I think, yeah, as you said, people are going to hear what they're going to hear.
Yeah, they, you know, the people that wanted to take that and turn it, took it and turned it.
What's a better story if you make it negative? And, you know, it's a better story.
Right, exactly. It's a better story. And then the media jumps on board, and then the followers just follow. Okay, the media said, you know, this guy's a bad guy. Mm-hmm. So you don't coach for 17 years and be a bad guy.
Yeah.
You don't coach for 17 years and be honorable. The lifespan in this coaching is 3 years.
Right.
If you can make it beyond 3 years, you're doing something right. 1 year, you can fake it as a coach, and people will give you, oh, it's only his first year. Second year, they start to find out. Third, you get fired, or you get another contract. Mm-hmm. I did that for 17 seasons, 20 seasons total, that's 17 awful. Here. You can't fake it for that long. Mm-hmm. So the players that are speaking out negatively against me, look at their history
mm-hmm.
versus mine. Or the club or the league or whatever.
I wanted my last question for you. Chris Golden, I think you and he are kind of like kindred spirits, because in the same way you're describing how people are kind of have a negative first impression of you, I kind of have a first negative impression of Chris Golden. I'm seeking to understand the guy. You know, his play is interesting. He's become quite perimeter oriented as he gets older, which just on a stylistic base doesn't appeal to me greatly. I like guys who attack the hoop and real athletic guys I can't mimic. But I think in that, again, talking to Max Becker, in his podcast, he said that Chris Golden is one of the more intriguing players, people you've ever met. Help me seek to understand.
I've been around the kid since he's 16, so he can't take it. He's one of the nicest human beings anyone could ever meet. He's one of the best individuals I've ever been around, one of the hardest workers I've been around, funniest guy in the locker room, has a sense of humor out of this world. His style of play is not to make anyone happy. His style of play is to make him happy, and he's been successful with it. His style of play is to make his coach happy, and he's done that. He's maintained contracts and stability at Melbourne. Mm-hmm. And I think Dean would love having him around. So I think, you know, I just think he's one of the best human beings I've met, and I would love to be around him for the rest of his life. You know, I talk to him periodically now, just checked up on his injury the other day. I have no benefit in saying that, cause he's kicked my butt and he's told me about it on side of the court. So, you know, he's kicked my butt and walked over to me and said, I am killing y'all. You don't have nothing for me. And I'm kind of like, yeah, you're right, but,
it's funny.
Get out of here.
Because it's funny. I'm interrupting you.
You know, he's just a great guy, and it's just disappointing that he is so misunderstood.
Mm. I'm still trying to figure him out. I think, are you and he kind of a kindred spirit in that way? Is that the appeal between you two?
Well, look, I think our appeal to each other is I'll give you a story, and this will probably sum us up. Like, my deal is never let a player outwork me. So if that player wants to go to the gym, I don't care what I'm doing. I can be in the middle of a fishing trip, and he calls me and go, hey, I want to go to the gym. I need to get some shots up. Boom, I'm dropping my rod, and I'm coming to work that player out.
Dropping your rod. It's a big deal.
Yes. Big deal. It's a big deal. That's the biggest deal you can get outside of my kids. But and even my kids knew if, you know, a player needed me, you know, one would, unless if my kid needed me, that superseded. But if my kid didn't need me, a player needed me, then let's go. And he would not let me, you know, I want to be the first one in the gym every day. Well, if I get there at 8, he would get there. He figured it out. He'd get there at 7:30. And then I'd figure it out and go, shit, he's here at 7:30. I better get here at 7:15. And he figured out, he'd get there at 7. And then finally one day I just said to him, Chris, we got to stop this shit. I said, because I can't get up any early. I got school, drop off. And he just started chuckling, and he beat me in the gym every day. When I got there, he was in a full sweat. Go, all right, you ready? And so I would work him out before practice, but he had already worked himself out for, you know, 30, 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. That's what's paid off, and that's what I can really respect him for. But, you know, his style of play, you know, he shouldn't be trying to make the other team happy. He should be trying to make Melbourne fans happy, his coach happy, his teammates happy. He shouldn't give a shit what anybody else thinks, and I don't think he does.
Right. You were saying he doesn't try to make – he doesn't worry about making people happy. You wouldn't use the term selfish in his play. He not selfish in the sense of taking a lot of shots, but he commands a lot of attention from his own team and others. Do you think that's a relevant description?
Well, I never met a great player that didn't believe in himself before they believed in a coach or the system.
So before they believed in the coach and the system, did you say?
Yes. Michael Jordan believed in Michael Jordan over here.
Absolutely.
You know, no question. He believed in Michael Jordan over the triangle. When they needed a bucket, they didn't run the triangle.
No,
they ran a clear out. So
maybe a pick with Longley. You know, maybe. Very, very rarely. You know,
but he believed in himself, and Chris believes in himself over his system, over his teammates, over his coach, and that's what makes him great. Does that go over sometimes? Yes, it does, and it does with LeBron. It does with Steph. Mm. You know, they'll shoot a bad shot at the end of the game. You're like, what is that? Like, are you kidding me? Well, they really felt like that was, you know, that's the best shot, you know, because they feel that way. Mm. And they hit most of those. Nobody was probably more selfish, if you want to call it, than Kobe, but how do we regard him? We regard him as one of the best ever. Right. And what we'll regard Chris Goulding at the end of the day as one of the best ever to play in this league.
Isn't it Chris Golding?
Yeah, I call him Goulding.
Call him
Golding. I'll say Goulding.
Right.
I called him Bubbles for years.
Oh, I remember Bubbles. So. Well, it's definitely Joey Wright. I appreciate you answering my questions.
No problem.